KALW.
I just Googled Pleasanton and PFAS and was shocked to find that it's in my water.
New tests are showing a toxic chemical in drinking water statewide.
I just assumed that California was always on top of it in terms of the air and water quality.
Then a man who went from a comic book fan to a creator.
It started with me saying I could do that. And that's really all it was. I was reading some comics. And this is back when I was like 13 years old, mid-90s. And I just decided that I could do this. I can make my own books.
I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Yesterday, we heard about a class of toxic chemicals called PFAS. It was detected in the carpets of 18 East Bay preschools. It's a man-made chemical used to make carpets stain-resistant and to make pans non-stick. It's been in hundreds of household goods for decades, but it's toxic to human health. It's also turning up in drinking water supplies nationwide. States like Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, wherever people test for it, it seems to show up. And thanks to a new state law, California is just beginning to test. Brett Simpson reports.
It's a Friday morning last October, and radio host Jill Buck is opening her show, Go Green Radio.
Go Green Radio, brought to you by.
This show reaches millions of people every month on VoiceAmerica.com, the nation's largest internet talk radio station.
So glad that you could tune in. We have a really important topic.
Today, she's interviewing environmental lawyer Rob Belope. He's here to tell her about his 20-year lawsuit against DuPont for dumping a mysterious toxic chemical into West Virginia water. Last fall, his book about the lawsuit and a movie adaptation called Dark Waters came out. Here's a clip from the movie.
You need to tell me what in the hell's going on.
DuPont is knowingly poisoning 70,000 local residents for the last 40 years.
That's Mark Ruffalo as Belote. In his interview, Belote tells Buck the story about how a DuPont plant was dumping this secret toxic chemical called PFAS into a local community's water. Residents were getting cancer, autoimmune disorders, and other diseases. Belote sued, DuPont settled, and the townspeople used the money to fund a 2013 health study that directly linked these diseases to PFAS in residents' blood.
Rob, I think that we are all just realizing what a debt we owe to you. I want to thank you so much.
When the interview ends, Jill Buck can't help but wonder if her town, Pleasanton, has similar problems.
I was just so enthralled by his story that when we finished the show and I signed off, I just Googled Pleasanton and PFAS and was shocked to find that it's in my water.
As it turns out, PFAS are showing up in drinking water statewide. Last January, California's Department of Drinking Water initiated a pilot study to test 600 water supplies for this chemical, including Pleasanton's three wells. By April, Pleasanton had detected such high levels, it had to shut down one of its wells.
Pleasanton is such a great town. We're used to making lists like that, being in the top 5 or top 10 for lots of good things. Great schools, safe community. And making the top 5 list like that for an issue as unhealthy and serious just blew me away. I was so shocked.
Turns out, Buck's not the only one blown away.
It was like a windstorm. I mean, it really took us by surprise.
I visit Kathleen Yurchak, the City of Pleasanton's Director of Operations, at her office.
I hadn't really heard of it being a significant issue, specifically in California.
Before last year, Yurchak and her team hadn't heard of PFAS. So they did their research and found out PFAS aren't new chemicals. They've been used since the 1940s in tons of household and commercial products. The problem is, new tests are showing that they've been draining off of landfills, airports, and military training sites into groundwater nationwide. And into that one well in Pleasanton. Yurchak says they only have 3 wells. Shutting off one of them won't work long term.
That's a critical piece of water supply for us.
The contaminated well, that underground mechanism failing in its duty to supply clean water to entire sections of the city, is in the field right behind her office at the operations facility. I'm already at her office, so I ask if I can see it.
I will open the back door, you can take a look, and you tell me if I'm wrong in my suspicion that it's not super interesting. See the generator that says CAT on it?
Yeah.
It's the building behind that.
That squat little, tan building?
Yep.
And then there's a well in there
mm-hmm.
that goes 400 to 500 feet into the
mm-hmm.
ground.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Nice. Great. On the surface, the well might not look like much, but Pleasanton relies on it to supply safe drinking water to thousands of people. For now, they're pumping more water from the other wells, but that won't work long term. So they're looking into treatment options that could end up being pretty expensive.
It could be as low as $2 million up to $22
million. And the cost of treating the PFAS will hit residents' water bills. So how does the community feel? On a Friday morning at a local coffee shop on Main Street, I ask around.
My name is Glenn Hebert.
And you've been a Pleasanton resident for how long?
33 years.
The city of Pleasanton sent out 2 direct mailers about PFAS to all their water customers last fall. So I asked Hebert if he had gotten them.
No, I pretty much ignore them when they come in the mail. I maybe shouldn't ignore them, but I don't drink the water. It's brackish. It's, it's strong enough to eat the granite countertops, chrome faucets. It's not very good quality.
Are you aware of the chemical PFAS?
Not in particular, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was carcinogenic.
I told him about the costs of treatment.
This would be an issue that I would wholeheartedly support paying for to get rid of it. I'm really surprised that it's just coming on the radar. I mean, it's probably been there for a long time. Who knows how long? Don't tell me how long you think it is. I don't want to hear it. Not much I can do about it now, you know, to be honest with you.
Others were not so naturally suspicious of the water as Hebert.
Sean McPherson, and I live in Dublin, California.
Dublin's one town over, but he spends a lot of time in Pleasanton.
It's the better coffee places. Better water.
Better water?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
So, have you heard at all about the chemical PFAS?
No.
Have you heard of the movie Dark Waters?
No. Does this make me sound really well-read?
No, not at all. When I tell McPherson about the contamination, he has a similar reaction to what Jill Buck describes feeling on the morning of her radio interview, and Kathleen Yerchak when she got the state's test back about the city's well.
I just assumed that California was always on top of it in terms of the air and water quality.
And as the father of a 5-year-old, McPherson says this issue strikes a chord.
You know, it's so funny. This is a side note, but I just told my son that the greatest invention society ever came up with was like the sewer system and clean water, because it saved, like, it was an entirely different world after that. So we just take it for granted. So I haven't even thought about water quality because I assumed that it would be the one thing that they would always take care of. So this is kind of this is a 10 on my list right now. It's a high level problem. So yeah.
Water quality isn't actually a new issue in California. The state has battled nitrate, chromium-6, and arsenic contamination for years. But PFAS in the water? That's new. And thanks to a new state law, Pleasanton's rude awakening over PFAS might come to many more California towns this year. Last July, Governor Newsom passed AB 756, requiring hundreds more drinking water supplies statewide to start testing for PFAS for the first time. And it's not just a California problem. In December, the Senate approved provisions in the defense bill expanding PFAS testing in drinking water across the nation. In Pleasanton, I'm Brett Simpson for Cross Currents.
Brett is a student at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Like many comic book fans, Jameel Hemphill got hooked on comics when he was a kid. Growing up in Oakland, he loved stories about superheroes, villains, and other realms. But something was missing. He wanted more characters that looked like him and the communities of color surrounding him. So he and his friends launched National Press Comics. It's a publishing company that focuses on diversity with characters and genres. KLW's Janae Darden spoke with Jameel about being a nerd.
Were you a blurred growing up, a black nerd?
Yeah, that's fair. Although my blurredness didn't kick in to like, I don't know, like fourth grade or so.
Okay.
Yeah. I was a cartoon kid. Everybody watches cartoons, everybody. But when I was in fourth grade, it's like a magical story, okay? I found some, like $4 on the street. Okay. Like I was riding my bike, I found some money. And I immediately rode to the Quick Stop. Okay. And I spent all the money, just like a kid would do. But I $4, and I'm dating myself. This is mid-80s. So $4 was a lot for candy and for baseball cards and all that.
You hit jackpot.
Right?
Yeah,
right?
Jackpot.
So I had like a dollar left, dollar and 20 cents or something left, and I could not figure out what to buy. And all of a sudden, like glowing was there. It was a spinner rack with the comic books. And I bought a copy of Uncanny X-Men, and that was a wrap. I stopped buying baseball cards. I like stopped buying Slurpees. I would literally like use my sugar money on comic books, and I loved them ever since. So that's when I became like a nerd.
You know, it's amazing how nerd culture has evolved.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, yeah. I mean, I was a nerd, and we weren't the cool kids.
Not at all.
And now nerds are the cool kids. Do you kind of miss when nerds were outcasts?
You know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, because when you see everybody enjoying what you're in, there's a sense of satisfaction. Like, see, I told you this stuff was cool.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, now you like it, you know? And then I think, like, holding on to your nerddom is where, like, a lot of the toxic fandom comes, that gatekeeping. So, like, I think it's great that everybody's into it, and you just have to respect they nerd. Like, I think even now there's still people are nerds for the movies. Mm-hmm. Right? Speaking specifically about comic books. Like, oh, you're a nerd. And those are completely different stories.
They are.
Than what you read. So there's two different ways to enjoy it.
Tell me about NPC, National Press Comics.
Yeah, NPC is a creator-owned publishing company based here in Oakland, or based here in the Bay Area in Oakland. It's funny, I think even in our company about section, it started with me saying I could do that. And that's really all it was. I was reading some comics, and this is back when I was like 13 years old, mid-90s. And I just decided that I was like, you know, I could do this. I can make my own books. And I looked up to Dwayne McDuffie and the creators over at Milestone, who are known for Static Shock and Icon. They had started to have less of a presence in the industry. Milestone faded away because they were under the control of DC, and they just weren't receiving the marketing that a lot of other places would. So between Milestone and Image taught me that you don't have to go work for Marvel or DC. There were seven artists. They wanted to make their own thing. They took off and made their own company, and now it's the number three publisher. So that was mind-blowing for a kid. But unfortunately, none of them looked like me. So Milestone was that company where it was a bunch of people, specifically people of color, black, Latino, Asian, who started their own imprint. And so that told me, like, oh, you can make your own comics, but you can also do it looking like you. I realized that if I was going to control the narrative, which is a big thing with my family, my aunt Linda Cumby, who taught at Oakland Tech English for 20 years, she was big on teaching me to control the narrative. Like, if you don't tell your story, someone else is going to tell it badly.
When we met, you broke down the hurdles to getting your comics into stores.
Correct.
And usually we talk about comic books, it's DC Marvel. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that to the audience? Like,
for sure.
Just how the publishing industry or the publishing model works for comic books.
For all intents and purposes, there's a monopoly in the distribution. So the reason that Marvel and DC are so synonymous with comic books is because, one, they have the marquee characters. They've been around for 75 and 80 years, respectively. But also because they make a deal with the one distributor, Diamond Comics, what that ends up doing is flooding the market with their titles. So when you go into the store, you would think it's only DC and Marvel, because you show in and there's 120 comic books on the shelf, and like 93 of them are either DC or Marvel.
Now, you and I, we both grew up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. We're 80s kids. Yeah. And one thing that I loved growing up in the 80s was wrestling.
Yeah, that's true.
And
yeah.
You used to be a wrestler.
I did. It was a, how do I call it? A wonderful detour. By the time I got to college, I was all about, I want to be a comic book artist. You couldn't mm-hmm. major in it, so I got graphic design, but still, that's what I wanted to do. And then I was a little more out of shape than I am now. And my buddy LaDon called me up one day and he said, hey man, we should get back in shape. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're right. What should we do? And he goes, you know, I found a pro wrestling school in Hayward and we get a discount if we sign up as a tag team. And I had wrestled in high school and then my first year of college. And so I immediately said, that is the dumbest thing you've ever said to me. We're friends, but not for long. Like, I am not, I will give you horse nor armor for this quest. And he went and joined without me. And then finally one day I just went down to see what this was. And I drove to this garage in industrial part of Hayward, past Winton, way out there, almost by the water. And I met Donovan Morgan. And I'll never forget, I was sitting in there and I was like waiting to talk to him. I said, hey, my friend signed up. I just want to see what this is about. And he goes, okay, sit down in the foyer and I'll wait. And through the foyer, you could kind of see into the garage area where the gym was set up. And I'm sitting there waiting, and all of a sudden I hear this huge creak, and then stomp, 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 creak, stomp, 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 creak. And I look over, and there's Dalip Singh, who wrestled in the WWE as a great colleague. He's about 7 feet tall, 300 pounds, giant Indian guy. And I see him just like running back and forth, and he's just 350 pounds of solid muscle. And Donovan comes out, and he goes, yeah, so LaDon signed up, and you're his friend. What do you think? And I asked Donovan one question. I was like, hey, would I have to wrestle that guy? And he was like, maybe. And I don't know what it was, but I was like, I'm in.
Oh, gosh.
I want to wrestle Dalip. Now, admittedly,
I want to wrestle a 300-pound man.
Later on, I got my wish. We had what's called Heat Night, where you learn how to take strikes, and Dalip made me and my friend Chris Wyckoff cry. I'm freely admitting that with a chop, it made us cry. It was horrible.
So a story I've read that you wrote is Minute. Is that how you pronounce
it? That's correct.
Okay, so Minute the Goddess. It's a black lesbian superhero.
Correct.
So tell us about Minute and what inspired the story. That's a great story to inspire the story.
Yeah, basically my daughter inspired the story. I looked at my characters and I don't necessarily have a checklist, but if I see a chance to write a character or a story that I've never tried before, I'm going to go for it. And when I had my daughter, I kind of realized I didn't have very many characters that directly look like her. You know, I have black female characters, but I just wanted a character specifically like, I'm going to make a character because you're here now. And I wrote Minute, who was a goddess, and I tried to make it more all ages. That was another thing I hadn't done before, was an all ages title. This may be my privilege speaking, but I've never considered a character sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
I just was writing her and her now girlfriend. And then like about halfway through the issue, I realized, they like each other.
They like each other.
Yeah, and then I just wrote it that way from then on. But I didn't set out to try to check diversity checkboxes mm-hmm. or anything. I just wrote the characters I saw her, and then that came out.
And so she has this power of this Egyptian goddess.
Correct. Nubian. Which is a plot point, because Nubia and Egypt were two separate countries who mm-hmm. warred. And so in this story, not only do the countries war, but their deities that they believe in also war.
What do you love most about being a creator?
It's great to attempt and actually do what Stephen King likes to call telepathy. You create an idea and then you put it in someone else's head and it lives there. There's kids out there who've read Minute now, and Minute is having adventures that I haven't written in their head. And that's super satisfying. I was in Indianapolis and we were at the Black Expo. And so what they'll do out there is they will give all the kids free tickets to the expo. So like a bunch of kids had bought our comics, and then we left at the end of the day and the kids were sitting on the sidewalk. It was like, I don't know, like 9 or 10 in a row, and they're all just nose deep in our comics. And they were so engrossed in them, they didn't even notice the guys who sold them the comics walked by. Like, they were just engrossed, and like that right there, like that was, I could retire. Like, that's it.
That was comic creator Jameel Hemphill speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. You'll find Jameel and other National Press Comics artists at First Fridays in downtown Oakland. Tune in tomorrow at 5. California's wildfires are getting worse, and workers' rights advocates say immigrant workers are cleaning up after them.
Yo pensé que yo iba a limpiar una casa normal.
I thought I was going to clean a normal house with some dust, maybe, she says. I didn't know about the ash.
Wildfire cleanup tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. Before we leave you, here's some local music.
Something keeps calling.
This is Rafael Sadiq, born, raised in Oakland, and he's performing at the Fox Theater this Friday night.
You might say I can never love again. Well, you might be right, at least tonight. My friends say I can never pull it together. Well, they might be right. At least tonight. My kids say I'll never come home again. And I know they're right. At least tonight. If I fail, my whole life goes to hell. And it don't seem right. I need help tonight. Something keeps calling.
Today's team includes Precious Green, Lisa Morehouse, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Sarah Lai Sterland. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
The priest said, you're gonna lose family. Might be.